Hello, faithful KKSY listeners. My name is Conspiracy 911 Kennedy, a.k.a. Jake's Computer. I just want to testify that the following show is documented. The evidence is real and verifiable. Names have not been changed, so that the guilty are identified. Please stay tuned to 90.1 FM, and maybe even tell your friends to listen as frequently as possible. Holla.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, let's get ready to rumble!
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
Suicide is a suicide.
I was at war with myself when I wrote this piece. I love you so much that I decided to recite this piece. At the end of this piece, I guarantee you a promise of peace. Warmongers go to war to settle their thirst for economic upward mobility. The same can also be said for Bloods, Crips, and MS-13s. They put work in the hood for capitalism just in order to get rich. So now you tell me, how is that any different from the secular violence in the Congo? After all, the United States isn't the only country with the hood. Urban city kids aren't the only kids with the mentalities that it's all good. While in these hard economic times, funeral services never been so good. It seems as if we're comfortable showing our tail. While we have an entire network named Fox that's designed to see us fail. And religious leaders condemning us to hell. We need to take a new route and hold government responsible and demand that the hood get an economic bailout. Religious leaders can't condemn black people to a place they already reside in. And I understand the mechanics of oppression. Your oppressor will pervert you to the point where you are an instrument of your own oppression. So hear me clearly. It's all good to promote war in inner city neighborhoods. So the CIA push crack to blacks. Young kids got money, so now they have to be strapped. They ran out and flood the hood with gats. And it's so common to have 4 o'clock in the afternoon rat-a-tat-tat. And a universal record label that's quick to promote gangster rap. It's no wonder why my pen is bulletproof. While my tongue is Teflon and while my words are like hollow point bullets piercing through the truth. We need to amend the Second Amendment. Because funeral services and the NRA, in my opinion, are one of the same economic upward mobilities. So who do they claim? If we knew our history, we would know that Willie Lynch is to blame. His words ring true to this very day. 300 years later, we are still slaves. Pants sagging, gun clapping, chip stacking, woman slapping. There's a lack of black movie producers in Hollywood, so why we be acting as if genocide is a form of keeping it real? Which is why I want to appeal to the human in you. Because this is what it takes for peace. So I'm gonna take a piece. And at the end of this piece, I guaranteed you a promise of peace. These are my words, and this is my voice. And we really do have a choice. We can either live in it, or we can rest in it. But by most accounts necessary, we will have it. Peace.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
The world of medicine continually adds new phrases to our everyday language. The newest, happy pills, a phrase that covers the range of new tranquilizing drugs designed to ease the problems of the mental illness and strain. This year, 35 million prescriptions for tranquilizers will be filled. Now, while success has been reported in several phases of their use, warning signs were posted this week by the American Psychiatric Association. Well, gentlemen, with millions of Americans taking daily doses of these so-called tranquilizing drugs, do you feel there's any danger to people doing that? May I start with you, Doctor?
Well, I would first start out by saying that I object to the use of the word tranquilizing, since it does not really accurately reflect the use of the drug and the nature of the drug. Of course, it comes from the idea that these were drugs that had a sedative action and therefore would render the patient into a tranquil state. To answer your question directly, I would say yes, there is a danger in the use of these drugs indiscriminately, without prescription, and without control by their family physician.
Mr. Gorman, how do you feel about it?
Well, I would say this. First of all, I want to join Dr. Denver in saying that the use of the word happy pills is most unfortunate. This is a silly business at best. They are pills which control severe agitation in certain cases, but happiness is an elusive proposition. And just one more thing, Steve, and that is this, that there is danger in the casual use, but I think that has been somewhat exaggerated, and we have overlooked the tremendous revolution they have caused in an attack upon mental illness.
You feel that there has been some value?
I think that it's been enormous, as I've only seen it touring hospitals in the last 11 years, but I have seen a leap of several centuries in the somatic treatment of mental patients through the use of these drugs.
Let me go to Dr. Blanton and ask his opinion.
Well, there are two aspects of it. One is the treatment of mental patients in mental hospitals by these drugs, and these drugs have been able to accomplish a great deal in mental hospitals. They have taken the place of electric shock in many cases.
Don't taste me, bro! Don't taste me, bro! Don't taste me!
And they've enabled people to go out of the hospital in a much shorter time than before. That, of course, is well recognized. However, I think that the great danger of these drugs is for the average person who's taking them without proper supervision. It keeps them from getting adequate treatment at the time, and these drugs have side effects which are not entirely known at the present time, and which I think may very well give rise to serious problems.
You mentioned without supervision, one must have a prescription to get these drugs, must he not?
Well, yes, people get them. They get one prescription, then they'll drop the doctor, and then they'll have it refilled, and then they'll go away and maybe get 50 of them, and they'll be taking them all by themselves and not coming back to the doctor. Many people I know just take them without very much supervision.
Do you think we should confine our activity then in terms of treatment to the conventional methods?
No, by no means. These drugs will help the person overcome an agitated or unhappy, perturbed state and make them available for other kinds of treatment. You can't help a person who is so upset that you can't talk to them very well, like a person you couldn't help very much when he's in a state of rage.
Mm-hmm.
So these drugs are very helpful as an adjuvant to psychological treatment and other kinds of treatment, too.
Don't hate me!
Mm-hmm. Let me go to Dr. Denver.
I would pick up the theme in this way, that we must really divide the problem into A, the use of the various pharmacologic compounds for psychiatric illnesses in outpatient treatment, namely in the office, by either the general practitioner, who really is the first psychiatrist the patient sees, and B, the use of these various compounds in the psychiatric hospitals. Now, there's no question, if anyone reviews the literature, the results, or actually tours the hospitals, that these pharmacologic compounds have produced the most extraordinary change that has ever been seen in the psychiatric hospitals. We were
this
able
has
to
been because of the drugs?
Because of the drugs. Now, insulin, coma.
I was a big supporter of the enhanced interrogation techniques.
Electrotherapy.
Don't taste me, bro!
Psychosurgery have been used there hitherto. Hydrotherapy was used in the years gone by.
I was a big supporter of waterboarding.
May I have asked this question, Dr. Blanton? I've read of perhaps 20 to 30 million neurotics, so-called, in the United States. That's one estimate that's been given. This is a rather scaring figure. What is a neurotic? How do you define a neurotic? What makes a person neurotic?
Modern psychology has a word that is probably used more than any other word in psychology. It is the word maladjusted. It is the ringing cry of modern child psychology, maladjusted. Now, of course, we all want to live the well-adjusted life in order to avoid neurotic and schizophrenic personalities. But as I move toward my conclusion, I would like to say to you today, in a very honest manner, that there are some things in our society and some things in our world for which I'm proud to be maladjusted. And I call upon all men of goodwill to be maladjusted to these things until the good society is realized. I must honestly say to you that I never intend to adjust myself to racial segregation and discrimination. I never intend to adjust myself to religious bigotry. I never intend to adjust myself to economic conditions that will take necessities from the many to give luxuries to the few and leave millions of God's children smothering in an airtight cage of poverty in the midst of an affluent society.
I hope you washed your hands. You just took the words right out of my mouth.
South African riot police opened fire on striking miners armed with machetes and sticks today, killing at least a dozen men. The shooting happened at the Lonmin Marikana platinum mine, some 60 miles from Johannesburg. The mine's been at the center of a week of violent demonstrations. In it, at least 10 people, including two policemen, have been killed. As Caroline Hawley now reports, the scenes evoke memories of how the apartheid regime also dealt with protests.
Trouble at the mine had been brewing for days, weapons drawn and already used in a dispute over wages. "We work hard," this miner said, "but we can't afford to send our kids to school. All we want is money. We're not fighting anybody." Thousands of South Africans who work in the mine had downed tools, and there had been fighting between rival unions. 10 people, among them police and miners, already dead. The police determined today to break up the protest.
"We will ask them to leave. But then, I don't want to explain to you, if they don't, what then? What I told you is, today, we are ending this matter."
The police had first used water cannon and tear gas to try to break up the crowds. But then, with miners apparently armed with machetes approaching them, a barrage of gunfire.
"Cease fire! Cease fire!"
By the time the order to cease fire had actually been obeyed, the death toll at this remote mine had risen dramatically. A police spokesman said a gun taken from an officer killed earlier in the week had been recovered. But union leaders are accusing the police of a massacre. President Zuma has expressed his shock, promising that the perpetrators of violence at the mine will be brought to book. Not since the days of apartheid have the police been involved in scenes like this. And for South Africans, it's brought back disturbing memories.
All of a sudden, pow, 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 pow. And he drops. You know, pow, 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 pow. And he drops.
Footage has emerged showing a standoff between police and an armed suspect in College Station, Texas. The man in a house just two blocks from the Texas A&M campus is believed to have shot dead a police officer and one other person as he was being served an eviction notice. The man filming is Army medic and neighbour Rigo Cisneros, who can be heard pleading with police to let him see to the victims.
"You got an ambulance here yet? I'm a medic."
"It's coming."
"Can I get to him? Really killing me to wait."
10-4, I got a medic over here if we need help."
Hey, wait till it's clear.
I'm trying to get his attention.
"We don't know if the house is empty."
Three other people, including two policemen, were injured in the incident. Suspected gunman Thomas Cafal was shot dead.
"I'm gonna fight them all. A seven-nation army couldn't hold me back. They're gonna rip it off. Taking their time right behind my back. And I'm talking to myself at night. cause I can't forget. Back and forth through my mind behind a cigarette, and a message coming from my eyes saying leave it alone.
At last, the warm arm of the war is reaching out and closing in on you, you screwy wabbit.
To a CBC News exclusive, an investigation is underway into a suspected cross-border smuggling operation. A police force in Ontario has already charged an officer with bringing $500,000 worth of drugs across the border. Now, Niagara Regional Police are looking into the activities of other officers. Our Dave Seglins is tracking the story, and he joins us now. So, Dave, this is quite the story. How did the drug smuggling operation first come to light?
Well, it was border officials. There's something called the Border Enforcement Security Task Force, made up by Department of Homeland Security in the U.S., immigration officials, as well as some Canadian Border Services, the RCMP. They caught on to the fact that there were some shipments, parcels, going through courier services in the United States where they detected some drugs that were being sent to a private mailbox outlet on the Buffalo and the New York side of the border. They began monitoring this private mailbox to see who was coming to pick up these packages. And lo and behold, it turns out it was a man named Jeffrey Purdy, who they've arrested in April. And he is a constable with the Niagara Regional Police Service, 13 years. And they have charged him with conspiracy to export controlled substances and to distribute. Now, these drugs, some of them were Valium. Some of them included the ingredient to make the date rape drug. But largely, it was testosterone and other anabolic steroids that the authorities contend were being brought across the border. And what's more, the investigation continues as to where those drugs went once they got here and whether there was any involvement of other police officers on the Canadian side.
Don't want to hear about it. Every single one's got a story to tell. Everyone knows about it. From the Queen of England to the hounds of hell. And if I catch it coming back my way, I'm gonna serve it to you. And that ain't what you wanna hear, but that's what I'll do. And the feeling coming from my bones said, find a home.
In this troubled economy, there is at least one industry that can't keep up with demand. Gun sales are rising across the country, and so is the stock price of America's biggest gun makers. As Tammy Leitner reports, the numbers are driven by a basic emotion, fear.
It's not your standard soccer mom gear.
There you go, miss.
For Michelle Shy, after-school activities for her two teens are in a league all their own.
We're taking not only gun classes, but knife training, combat, self-defense.
These are 45s.
This Los Angeles mom is among a growing number of Americans arming themselves out of fear.
The mass shooting really in Colorado has prompted you.
It has. You know, I mean, all of the Virginia Tech shooting, the Columbine, all of them.
Fear is partly why 10.2 million guns have been sold this year, a record pace 20% ahead of last year. Also driving those sales, the fear of stricter gun control laws under a second Obama administration.
Yes, Steve?
I'm just saying that this tragedy raises once again the question of what can be done to help prevent events like this from occurring. And that will take thought and consideration, but I'm not referring to any particular legislation. I'm just saying this is something that needs to take some thoughtful consideration. We've now had, apparently, from the early reports, three of these tragedies in a row, and I happen to believe that this is not a matter of the weapon that it's used. It's a matter of the individuals and the choices these people make, and we have to understand how to prevent those kinds of choices from being made. I don't think gun laws are the answer.
I'm going to Wichita, far from this opera forevermore. I'm going to work a straw, make a sweat drip out of every pore. And I'm bleeding, and I'm bleeding, and I'm bleeding right before the Lord. All the words are going to bleed from me.
All of a sudden, pow, 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 and he drops. You know, pow, 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 and he drops.
We must warn you that this next story is very graphic. It contains CNN exclusive video that shows Saginaw, Michigan police officers shooting a homeless man dozens of times. The case has now drawn the attention of civil rights investigators with the Justice Department. Police say the man threatened them with a knife. But witnesses and family members say it didn't have to end this way. Here's national correspondent Jason Carroll.
A joint investigation is underway into the shooting. Amateur video details what happened during the final moments. I do have to warn you, the video is graphic.
This amateur video, purchased by CNN and not made public until now, captured the confrontation between six Saginaw police officers and Milton Hall, a 49-year-old man who his family says suffered from serious mental health issues. Hall, seen in the middle of your screen, police say, had just had a run-in with a convenience store clerk. He was in a standoff with police and holding some sort of knife. A female officer is heard shouting. If you listen carefully, Hall is then heard continuing to yell at police. Hall seems agitated, but not intimidated by a police dog. Heard on the tape, a witness describes what he sees.
In a karate stance, about to go ham on him.
Then, as Hall appears to take a few steps, everything comes to a head. Local media report 46 shots were fired. CNN counted the sounds of at least 30 shots on the videotape. Anthony Baber witnessed the shooting.
All of a sudden, pow, 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 and he drops. You know, pow, 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 and he drops. In a karate stance, about to go ham on him.
And now it's time for tonight's The Good, The Bad, and the very, very malicodermously ugly, The Good. Alabama Citizens for Constitutional Reform. The group met this weekend as part of their efforts to rewrite Alabama's state constitution, which according to Auburn University professor Wayne Flint, quote, was born in racism to help the rich and disenfranchise poor blacks and whites, end quote. The group, along with the state's Constitutional Revision Commission, has spent the last 4 years tackling a full overhaul of the state constitution. The first victories for the group came in November when three referendum items will be placed on the ballot. The three referendum items, having to deal with private corporations and banking, already passed the Alabama state legislature. Nice job updating your constitution, Alabama. Just don't let Mr. Originalist Antonin Scalia know that such a thing is possible. The bad. California Assemblyman Tim Donnelly. The California Assembly is considering an increase in the texting and driving fines. That's because from 2001 to 2007, nearly 16,000 people were killed by cell phone distracted drivers in California alone. But these numbers aren't startling enough for Donnelly, who railed against the increase, saying it's not what the founding fathers intended.
No! Stop it already!
You're one to a west.
On what charge? You got nothing on me.
Oh, no? Well, listen to this. Resisting an officer, assault and battery, trespassing, disturbing the peace, miscellaneous misdemeanors, public nuisance, traffic violations, going through a boulevard stop, jaywalking, triple parking, conduct unbecoming to a rabbit.
Nice looking chap, though.
Violating traffic regulations.
Where were we?
A hypersonic jet engine is being tested, which could see flight times between New York and London reduced to as little as an hour. The X-51A Waverider can travel at speeds of up to 4,500 miles an hour. That's around five times the speed of sound. In testing, the jet is dropped from the wing of a B-52 and rocket-propelled to a higher altitude. The rocket then drops away before the jet engine takes over. The test flight is due to last for around 5 minutes. Aviation experts say it could be as significant as the move from propeller to jet planes.
Suicide bomb and hell broke loose. Hell broke loose.
The military's big test of a new super-fast jet didn't go so well. The X-51 Waverider ended up spinning out of control and had to be destroyed. Our Pentagon correspondent Chris Lawrence is joining us to tell us what went so horribly wrong. What happened, Chris?
Well, Wolf, it was always scheduled to go into the ocean, but not after just 30 seconds. The Air Force is telling us that the Waverider did safely separate from that B-52 that carried it into the air, and the rocket boosters fired as planned, but then they noticed the problem, a fault in one of the control fins, and 30 seconds later, it lost control and crashed. Now the big question is, what next? The Air Force had bought four of these Waveriders, tested now three of them. It has one left, and it spent about $140 million on this hypersonic technology. But they've only budgeted up until this test yesterday, Wolf, so it remains to be seen if they've got the money to still use that last Waverider. Hopefully, you didn't cancel your round-trip ticket on American Airlines from here to Europe.
Not yet.
Ditches in the middle of the road. You pay $100 just for filling in the hole. Listen to the general every goddamn word. How many ways can you polish up a turd? And left, right, left, left, right, left, right. Hell broke loose. Hell broke loose. Hell broke loose. How is it that the only ones responsible for making this mess? Got the sorry ass is able to a goddamn desk. And hell broke loose. Hell broke loose. Left, right, left. What did you do before the war? I was a chef. I was a chef. And what was your name? It was Jeff. Jeff. I lost my buddy and I wept. Wept. I come down from the meth. So I slept, slept. I had a good home, but I left, left.
Well,
Well, we've got some breaking news here as well, which is there has been another attack in Afghanistan on members of the NATO forces by an Afghan policeman. It looks at the moment as though there were no deaths. Now, this is the fifth such attack by a member of the Afghan security forces on coalition forces in the past week.
Pants to the wind for a joke. I pranced right in with the dope. Glanced at her shin, she said, nope. Oh. Left, right, left. Then Rod Bod pissed heavy when he woke. Get me another body bag, the body bag's full. And my face was scorched, scorched. I miss my home, I miss my porch, porch. Left, right, left. Can I go home in March? March. My stance was a chin full of soap. Had a rancid dinner with the Pope. And left, right, left. Kelly Presoda got his thumbs blown off. Sergio's developing a real bad cough. Sergio's developing a real bad cough. And hell broke loose. Hell broke loose. Hell broke loose.
Military officials say more soldiers committed suicide last month than any other month on record. The 38 suicides include active and non-active duty soldiers in the Army, National Guard, and Reserve. And the Army has confirmed 120 suicides so far this year. Last month, the Secretary of Defense said the U.S. military was facing an epidemic of suicides.
Boom went his head away and boom went Bowery. What the hell was it that the president said? Give them all a beautiful parade instead. And left, right, left. While I was over here, I never got to vote. I left my arm in my coat. My mom, she died and never wrote. We sat by the fire and ate a coat. Just before he died, he had a toke. Now I'm home.
So listen, England, we have a special relationship, right? And that doesn't just mean hand jobs under the table at the G8 summits and going to war with us even when it's just because we're bored. It's more than that, right? We can come to you for advice, right? A little bit of fatherly know-how, a little bit of paternal what for. I know we ran away from home years ago while screaming, "You're not the boss of me!" But now we're all grown up and we need a little help. So here's the question. How do you let go of an empire? Because we know we need to, but it's really hard. So far, we seem willing to let our entire country collapse into a pile of broken infrastructure, environmentally gutted lands, and Motley Crue reunion tours, as long as it means we can keep our 900 military bases around the world. Our economy is filled with debt, our people are filled with Kentucky Fried Chicken, our chicken is filled with hormones, our hormones are filled with mercury, and we don't know what mercury is filled with because we defunded NASA in order to pay the $1 million bonuses of the corporate sacks and bankrupting us on the home front. Exploring the heavens and furthering mankind, we need to pay for Lloyd Blankfein's girlfriend's expensive sushi habit. So how'd you do it? How'd you give up your addiction to thinking you police the world and control the globe? I'm not saying it was easy for you. I know you had to be slapped in the face a few dozen times too before you backed off, but I just thought you might have some tips, little advice. Is the trick to keep one foot in the imperialist waters at all times, kind of like quitting cigarettes but still having one on special occasions? You know, you find yourself at 3 a.m. on New Year's morning with your pants missing and an empty bottle of Jack on your lap, and you think, why not drop a couple of bombs on Afghanistan? You know, just for old time's sake. No one will know. Is that the best way to do it? Because we have to come up with something. We've lost all our friends. We've spent all our money. We've already got two tickets for invading foreign lands while under the influence. We crashed Mom's car. We accidentally killed all our pets. Turns out wolves aren't immune to cancer like we thought they were. We have illegitimate children all over the world. Half of them we haven't even met. We just send them a Hallmark card and some guns for their birthday once a year. We're pretty close to rock bottom, but still, there's nothing like that high of true hegemony. You know? What? What? We can quit anytime we want.
See, in this world, there's two kinds of people, my friend. Those with loaded guns, and those who dig. You dig. Quit.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring. Bound by wild desire, I fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 and it burns, burns, burns. The ring of fire.
Parts of Spain and the Canary Islands have been racked by devastating wildfires that have destroyed buildings and killed at least two firefighters. The blazes have hit local tourism, and the emergency services have been working around the clock to battle the fires, as these dramatic night shots show. 100%. Fortunately, so far, the most popular resorts and towns have not been seriously affected.
Fast-moving wildfires have spread across parts of Washington state. Around two dozen buildings have burned so far, among them parts of a chimpanzee sanctuary. Authorities say the animals are unharmed and firefighters are working hard to protect the building the chimps are in. The fire's covering an area that's nearly 3,000 acres.
The fire is being driven by pretty strong winds, and what we're trying to prevent it from doing is jumping the Yakima River.
It's a similar story in Southern California, where around 7,000 acres is burning. More than 1,000 firefighters, air tankers and helicopters are involved in the operation to tackle the flames. So far, the cause of both fires is unknown.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 and it burns, burns, burns. The ring of fire, the ring of fire.
Everyone knows that dogs love digging up bones, but one resourceful pooch in Nova Scotia went above and beyond his canine call, helping to unearth bones from an animal that lived before the dinosaurs. The fossil find has scientists very excited. Our Michael Serapio is also excited, and he's following the story. So, Michael, what happened here?
Well, this all starts with a dog by the name of, get this, Kitty.
And okay.
I didn't make this up, it's true. But Kitty was up at the cottage along the Northumberland shore in Nova Scotia, and he was out for a walk with his owner, Patrick Keating. Now, this is Patrick here, that's Kitty over there. And as Kitty was walking along the Northumberland shore, he came across a very interesting find. Now, what he found was this. It is a fossilized stone there, and in there is a fossil of a a spine as well as a rib cage and a partial sail from an animal that died many, many years ago. Now, they didn't know what it was. They went back home to Halifax. Then a few weeks later, they went back to the cottage and Kitty found this, a fossilized skull complete with tooth. Now, the family thought this was very interesting, not really knowing what it was, though. So Patrick's brother, Peter, took the fossils to the Nova Scotia Museum, and it turns out what Kitty, the dog, uncovered is a fossil of this animal here. Now, this is a sail-tailed, I won't say lizard, but I'm making it, there we go, sailback reptile, rather. And this dates back about 300 million years, so yes, right before the dinosaurs, but quite the find for the family pooch.
There's a dire prediction about the future of pack ice in the Arctic. The European Space Agency says that within a decade, it could completely disappear for part of the summer. Scientists analyzed data from a satellite that measures the thickness of Arctic ice. They say it's melting much faster than they thought just a few years ago. Global warming and rising greenhouse gases may be contributing factors. And Johanna is here with what you can expect today in the weather. Johanna, it's been a hot summer across Canada and even where I'm from in St. John's.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if that's contributing to any of the ice, but I kind of like the warm weather back home.
Yeah, it's sort of a pros and cons. Can't please everyone across country with the hot weather. We've been seeing lots of impacts in the crops and mosquitoes. All of these stories keep coming out because of the hot summer we've been having. In fact, probably most of Canada and most of the U.S. will end up, once we add up all the numbers, with the hottest year on record. So yes, another piece of information that'll go into the larger trends of the climate changing.
On the planet is the same. The ice in the North Pole is actually frozen ocean water, so-called sea ice, that if it melts will not elevate sea level. For sea level, the important ice lies on Greenland and Antarctica. The Greenland ice sheet reaches more than 3,000 meters into the air. That's more than 10,000 feet. If all this ice melts or breaks off into icebergs and ends up in the ocean, will elevate sea level by more than 7 meters. The Antarctic ice sheet is even bigger. It holds ice of the equivalent of 45 meters in global sea level, and it elevates up to 4,000, sometimes even 4,500 meters into the air. Under global warming, two things can happen. Ice can melt, obviously. This is happening in Greenland at the moment. And it can slide, and can slide even faster than at present, and reach the ocean where it breaks off into icebergs and elevates sea level. Run fast for your mother, run fast for your father. Sheets like the ones in Greenland and Antarctica to disintegrate, it takes hundreds, maybe thousands of years. No one knows exactly how quick this will go, and it will depend on the amount of global warming that we produce. During the last century, we've increased the global mean temperature by less than a degree. During the same period, global mean sea level has increased by 20 centimeters. If we keep increasing our CO2 emissions each year like we are doing it at the moment, we expect the temperature increase by 5 degrees by the end of the century. Even if we lose only a few percent of the ice that is available globally to elevate sea level, low-lying regions like Shanghai, Calcutta, Hamburg, London, or Florida might get a problem. So we have enough ice on the planet to elevate sea level by more than 50 meters. The big question is how quick this will go. And this depends on the amount of greenhouse gases that we emit into the air.
Too much TV and our news. It's obviously our news media station. It is. I think we should. And people aren't watching it. They're not watching enough of it. Well, I don't know. Why should they watch it? But people aren't informed enough. And I think we should take all the bullshit shows that we're all watching anyway, right? The reality crap, the cooking shows and the fishing shows and all that, the dancing with the tards. Just take that stuff. Take that stuff, and instead of subliminal marketing, put subliminal truth underneath so people wouldn't even know they're learning. You're just watching robot cupcake wars like you do every Tuesday, and underneath would be like, hey, kids, make your clothing, and ExxonMobil owns your government, and why'd you ever give up drawing when you were younger? You were really good, and you quite enjoyed it, and you gave that up to what? File paperwork 12 hours a day? Why? Why? So you could afford some marble countertop island in your kitchen? You don't even use a thing! You don't even use a f***ing countertop! I could understand this life choice if you were humping that countertop, balls deep in that marble every day and twice on Sunday, then this life choice would make sense!
Einstein said, great spirits will always encounter violent opposition from mediocre minds. But what he didn't reinforce is the fact that mediocrity will always be the masses. They're always going to be kings. So you'll always encounter that. It's not something you overcome. We'll always have mediocre people, and we'll never know what the fuck is going on until we're dead at best. We might not even know then. Death might be like,
Have you figured it out yet? Nope, you're going back. It's all... Nothing makes sense. Everything's retarded. And making people laugh is like throwing biscuits at dogs. Maybe they catch one in their mouth.
Judge Gray.
Well, thank you. I guess I am the final presenter list formally on here, and I want to commend you, first of all, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hagman, for inquiring in this. I want to commend you for your leadership in bringing up this really important topic. And I'm also going to commend you for staying within schedule. That's an amazing accomplishment in itself. I would, now that I guess I am the last presenter, like to comment quickly about a few other things that have been discussed, and then I would like to talk to you about children. But that issue really has not been addressed particularly, except maybe by Reverend Richardson. The first is that if this state of California were to in fact make this marijuana no longer illegal for adults, that is not at all the same thing as condoning it. We don't condone the smoking of cigarettes or the using of alcohol, etc. So to put that label on it, I think, is inappropriate. Number two, as I have an understanding that today, as we speak here in Sacramento, that there are thousands of people in prisons in the state of California today for doing nothing but smoking marijuana. Thousands in prison for doing nothing but smoking marijuana. Why? Because they're on parole for one reason or another. And once they get off parole for whatever that offense was, if they smoke marijuana, it's a violation of parole, and they're immediately put back into state prison with all of the benefits that they had accrued, getting jobs, etc., supporting their families, being lost. Another one is that the tougher we get with regard to marijuana prosecution, literally, from my experience as a judge, and I have seen this in Orange County forever, the softer we get with the prosecution of everything else. And that is something that we simply have so many resources, and if we're spending them in prosecutions of marijuana, we are not spending them for prosecutions of rape, homicide, etc. Then, marijuana will never put this violence that we heard earlier out of business. All of these statistics that you heard earlier about the violence and the killings of both the police officers and everyone else is occurring under today's system of marijuana prohibition, etc. The only way you put these Mexican cartels out of business and these other violent creatures out of business is to undercut the price, to make it no longer illegal so that you don't have that enormous profit motive to get these people involved with that violence, etc. The only way you do it is to undercut the price, and Assembly Bill 390 is a really good place to start. Otherwise, there are marijuana today that is stronger in our society without a doubt. But the reason why it's out there and stronger is because of marijuana prohibition. That there are lots of people that would much prefer, like you said, not to use the stronger stuff, but the cardinal rule of prohibition is always push the stronger stuff. So if I'm a bootlegger and I run into the same criminal justice problems for selling a barrel of beer as a barrel of bourbon, guess which one I'm going to push? The bourbon, because I make more money. It's the same thing with marijuana. Nothing is going to be legalized in this state. It is a program of the strictly regulated distribution. It wouldn't be legalized. It's a strictly regulated distribution, just like alcohol and cigarettes. We hopefully will not advertise them. Please put into your legislation not to allow this to be advertised. We want to de-glamorize it, not glamorize it. So no advertising, and hold people accountable for their actions. I know I'm going on, but I'd like to talk about children for a couple of minutes, because today our marijuana laws are putting our children in harm's way. We are continuing with this failed program for all of its defects, so-called, because we want to reduce the exposure of a lifestyle of marijuana usage and marijuana selling to our children, and it's doing the opposite. Today, it is easier for our young people to get marijuana than it is alcohol. And if you don't want to listen to me, ask any teenagers you can find. They will tell you that because of marijuana prohibition. And Reverend Richardson kind of stole one of my lines, because it's true, because the illegal dealers do not ask for ID. So let's make it less available for children by regulating and controlling it. Number two, adult drug dealers will recruit children to sell drugs.
They will recruit them to their, into their own drug distribution system. For $50 in cash, you can buy all of the 15, 16-year-olds in the inner city or anywhere else that you want to. It's chump change for the adult drug dealer. It's lots of money for a kid. So you use them as gophers and lookouts and couriers, and as soon as their reliability is established, then they're trusted to sell small amounts of drugs out in the communities. And who do they sell to if they're out there doing it? I assure you, no one in this room. They're going to sell to their 14, 15, 16-year-old peers. That is despicable, and it's caused by drug prohibition. So I say, let's reverse that, let's turn it around, let's regulate it, let's control it, because this prohibition is not working.
Acid was my favorite drug. Acid opened up my mind. It expanded my mind. Because of acid, I now know that butter is way better than margarine. I saw through the bullshit. When I was on acid, I would see things like beams of light. And I would hear sounds that sounded an awful lot like car horns. When we were on acid, we were going to the woods, because when you're in the woods tripping, there's less likely a chance you'd run into an authority figure. But we ran into a bear. That was even more of a buzz kill. My friend Dwayne was standing there raising his right hand, swearing to help prevent forest fires. We got him away from the bear. He put his arm around my shoulder. He said, Mitchell, Smokey is way more intense in person.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
It's clutching to the earth on mushrooms. We're perfectly high, and Tom Rhodes said we should do a little more. But we're perfectly high, and to be a suitable host, we ground up another batch of mushrooms with some smoothies and drank them, and within minutes, we were clutching to the driveway, clutching to the pavement, trying to hold on to the earth because we thought the earth would spin us off. And I pissed my pants purposely because I couldn't get up and stand. I tried to get up to piss and I fell right back down. And I go, I'm just going to piss my pants. And Bingo was there to be our earth mother and savior. And she watched us and she changed me like a baby when I pissed my pants. And when finally Tom Rhodes erupted a load of vomit across the flat, the driveway, it gave me enough wherewithal to wake up enough that I knew I could stand, and I get up, and he looked at me from all fours with bile dripping from his mouth, and he said to me, aren't you glad we did more? I just gave birth to the universe.
That's what I remember the most is we had done the second dose at my recommendation, which was a tactical error, and you pissed your pants, and it was the most loving thing I've ever seen any girlfriend or wife do for a man. Bingo changed your pants and your underwear like changing a baby's diapers. And then I vomited my skulls out. And you were like, come on, Tom, you're in your own vomit. And the stars were... The stars in Arizona, especially Bisbee, it seems like you could jump up and grab them. They're so close. And I'm all there on mushrooms, and I'm lying in my own vomit, and you're like, you gotta get out of your own vomit, and I'm like, it's placenta, man, I just gave birth to the universe. And then Ricky Lee Jones is singing, we belong together, and it was a classic.
We belong together.
Now, go find the others. .com.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.